Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. Our guest this week is Jalen Rose. We talked with Jalen a few months ago. He is an NBA commentator for ESPN's Countdown program. Jalen, what are your initial impressions on last night's Warriors-Cavs game?
My initial impressions were, wow. Fortunately for me, this is my 15th straight year covering the NBA Finals for a television network. And so there's so many memories that stand out to me. But watching the maturation of Kevin Durant throughout these finals has been awesome. Anytime you have seven of the most recent eight MVP winners in the same NBA Finals, seven current NBA All-Stars, yet the only one without a championship at this moment is Kevin Durant. And there's been a lot of talk about how he went about joining the Golden State Warriors. But for a superhero, basically like Kevin Durant, to join the Avengers, basically what he did, the last handful of years, he's already been a top two or three player. I don't care who you ask. But to put him on the Golden State Warriors, who won a championship two seasons ago, won 73 regular season games last year, now they're 3-0 versus the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals, it was breathtaking to watch how he performed in the fourth quarter in Game 3.
Yeah, you mentioned his maturation, how he joined the Warriors. There are some people who had an issue saying you can't join the team that beat you. It's like joining up with the bullies, etc., etc. So I think that in order to like kind of justify himself as an important piece of this, just based on the way that people talk about sports, it wouldn't have been enough for him to have, like, even the role that Steph Curry has had on the team in these finals. He couldn't ride anybody's coattails. He had to be the best player on this team. And when he just walked up the floor and hit a three right over LeBron to put the Warriors ahead, I think it was just a really signature moment of his career.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. The justification does not take place when you win the championship and your numbers are pedestrian. You have to be dominant. And that's what he's been in all three games. In particular, when being guarded by LeBron James. The three-point shot he made early in the fourth quarter when LeBron and Kevin Love had a miscommunication. The drive left on the baseline, rising up over Tristan Thompson, effortlessly getting a two-point shot, and you made it. And you mentioned it, the dagger. A stroll in the park, crosses half court, pulls up for three from deep over LeBron. It not only puts Kevin Durant in a position clearly to be a champion, but to be Finals MVP. And Steph Curry was terrific. He had a big game. Klay Thompson knocked down shots and did a really good job defensively. LeBron James was dominant. 39 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists. Most of it took place in the first three quarters. But Kevin Durant has been the star of all stars.
If the Warriors close out this series as a sweep, are they really, like, is there anybody that you can think of that had any NBA team that had a better postseason or a more dominant postseason than this team?
In recent memory, it's hard for me to say a team has had a better postseason, because for you to go undefeated throughout the playoffs, and again, injuries do play a part of it. Unfortunately, history doesn't sometimes acknowledge that. You can look at the run of the Cleveland Cavaliers through this year's playoffs. They faced some teams with a couple of injuries. Kyle Lowry was injured when they faced Toronto. Boston had Isaiah Thomas deal with an injury. For the Golden State Warriors, the exact same thing. Nurkic for Portland was injured. George Hill was injured for the Utah Jazz. And they definitely would have lost game one versus San Antonio had Kawhi Leonard not gotten injured. Plus, they were already without Tony Parker. So that would have eliminated the fact for me that they would have gone undefeated. But since those things did take place and the way they're performing right now against LeBron, playing at an elite level, Kyrie, the exact same thing. And for them to handle their business the way they're doing it and to play in Cleveland, silence the crowd, snatch the hearts of the Cleveland Cavaliers on their home floor, and put themselves in position to sweep the series, I never would have thought when this thing started that I actually would have an opportunity to promote my Wally's Broom in Cleveland because the Golden State Warriors are going to sweep the series.
One of the reasons that the Warriors, it seems like they're going to sweep, maybe they don't win game four, but it seems like even if they don't win game four, they'll win it in five, is LeBron and Kyrie haven't caught, well, Kyrie was struggled in games one and two, but he was great last night. But LeBron and Kyrie didn't get a lot of help from the supporting cast last night. One of the criticisms of LeBron that I think is really silly is when he passes to somebody who's wide open and that person misses a shot, as Kyle Korver did right before Durant hit that three last night. Do you think it's like ridiculous that people get on LeBron for that unselfishness?
Well, there's a couple of things. It's a dichotomy that takes place with LeBron James. Because he has been a freak of nature, he's put himself in a position to be an all-time great. Clearly a regular season MVP four times, a finals MVP three times, a champion three times as well. People want to see you not only perform well in the first three quarters, but they want to see how you're able to close the games in the clutch. And what happens for LeBron James, he wants to make the correct basketball play. He doesn't want to necessarily have it be all about him late in the basketball game. And I agree with you. The pass to Kyle Korver, that was actually the quality play. You want Kyle Korver to make that shot. That's why he's in the NBA, to make open three-point shots at crucial times. That's why they signed him. That's why they brought him on the team in the regular season. With that being said, when you are as accomplished as LeBron James, in the last couple of minutes of the game, fans, media, critics see that Kyrie Irving is more of the player that your team is going to be the closer, to finish games. That's what makes people wonder about how LeBron's all-time greatness is going to rank with some of the best to do it, because a lot of the people that have been noted in that conversation are also noted to be closers. But they forget LeBron James against the Pistons, when his first go-around with the Cleveland Cavaliers, scored 29 of the final team's 30 points. Or in game six at Boston, the signature dominant performance that LeBron exhibited. So LeBron, to me, has shown he can be clutch, but more importantly, it's about making the right basketball play. But on the other end, when you're Kevin Durant and you're giving up the basketball, it's to Steph Curry, a two-time MVP, the only unanimous MVP in the league's history. It's to Klay Thompson. They're the Splash Brothers. And so it looks a lot different when you play with more superheroes like KD does. But for KD to close the game and do it in signature fashion on LeBron, when they're two of the top five fourth highest paid athletes, it says a lot.
One thing that you mentioned last night during the post game is that one of the undefeated forces of nature is the curse of the Kardashians. Tristan Thompson last night, 0 points, 3 rebounds in 23 minutes. For this series, he's got 8 points and 11 rebounds. He was a major factor last year when the Cavs were able to beat the Warriors And this year, he's wearing a Harry Potter invisibility cloak. Do you actually attribute this to being in the Kardashian dating tree, or is there something else at play that we can't necessarily observe?
Well, there's clearly something at play because you mentioned it. Not only the points, but the rebounds, the energy, the loose balls, the tenacity. With his height and his bulk, he gives the Cavs something that they can't duplicate up front. This is why they were trying to sign Andrew Bogut, who got injured really fast into his tenure. This is why they worked out Larry Sanders, who didn't necessarily pan out for the team. It's because they need that effort and those intangibles up front. And him going missing is head-scratching for everyone. And you acknowledge that he was scoreless in game three. He was also scoreless in game one. Here's a player that, against the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, was getting the points, was getting the rebounds, was even making his free throws. So I can't put my... I don't understand how his performance has basically been a disappearing act, but you mentioned it, and I have to acknowledge. Now you start looking around for reasons. And I did say three things that have been constants that we can rely on. Father time, gravity, and the curse of the Kardashians.
You know what's interesting is that, like, Harvard Sports Analytics last year, I saw this last night during the game, they did a research study, and it wasn't just that, like, dating a Kardashian was bad for your performance, but any athlete dating a celebrity was bad for his performance. But specifically with the Kardashians, they said, we found a 12.8% performance decline from predating to dating, and then a 16.5% increase after breaking up with a Kardashian. And you look at some of the NBA players who have dated Kardashians, whether it's Chris Humphries or Rashad McCants, who swears his whole career would have been different if he had never crossed paths with Khloe, or James Harden having a downstretch when they were together and becoming an MVP candidate this year now that they're no longer together. And it really does seem like a significant factor.
It's unique because as an athlete, there's a difference between being covered by the media and being followed by the paparazzi. Like, those are two different elements of not only exposure, but expectation. And what you just said, I mean, you can't argue with facts. There were a lot of people that got caught into that Kardashian web, and it didn't necessarily work out for them. Lamar Odom, James Harden, Reggie Bush, Rashard McCants, Miles Austin, Chris Humphries. This time last year, Odell Beckham was missing OTAs being seen with Khloe Kardashian. Do you know what Odell Beckham, James Harden, and Tristan Thompson all have in common?
What's that? The playoff disappearing act?
Number 13.
Oof. Well, they all also the last time.
I believe in certain superstitions, and I know about a couple of curses, the Lil B curse, the Kardashian curse. I was the 13th pick in the draft. It worked out really well for me, but in these NBA finals, it's not working out well for Tristan Thompson.
The Cavs, they put together this super team. They rolled through the East. But now they come up against the Warriors, and it doesn't look like, if the Warriors can keep their core four assembled and healthy, that anybody in this league is going to be able to even come close to touching them for the next at least 2 years after this, until the cap situation really becomes dire. What can the Cavs even do this offseason to get anywhere near on the Warriors level?
It's interesting because when you have LeBron James, it's almost been a rite of passage that you're going to win the Eastern Conference. You've done it 8 times overall, 7 times in a row with 2 different teams. The only player in the history of the NBA to play 20-plus NBA Finals games for more than one team. So when you have him on the team and you look at the landscape of the Eastern Conference, I said this all season. Whoever faced the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals, whether it was Washington, Toronto, and in this case it was the Boston Celtics, would celebrate their season. But for LeBron at this point of his career, he's clearly playing for championship glory. I would think unless he's able to get a player added to the Cleveland Cavaliers that was in this year's All-Star game, like a Paul George, like a Jimmy Butler, without necessarily breaking up Kevin Love, the dynamics of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, that now puts you in a position to put that other player on the floor. I hear a lot of rumblings about possibly adding Carmelo Anthony. If you closely watch the game, he's not a player that moves a lot without the ball. He's not really a catch-and-shoot type player. And the strength of LeBron James is getting downhill, finishing at the hoop, and then making a jump shot secondary. And Kyrie Irving is one of the better one-on-one players in the game. How about watching he and Steph Curry go back and forth and finish at the hoop? For all young players out there, they jump off both feet. They finish with both hands. They don't do it with explosions. They do it with repetition. They do it with touch. I don't necessarily see a path for the Cavs and LeBron against these Golden State Warriors unless they're able to add that level of player that I just described to their roster going into next season.
Well, they could. It's conceivable that they could add Carmelo without having to give much up, although that would have pretty severe luxury tax ramifications. With Jimmy Butler or Paul George, I don't think that they're going to be able to add a player like that without giving up one of the core pieces that got them this far. I don't know that they could, anyway, they could get Jimmy Butler, but with Paul George, I feel like they'd have to at least give up Kevin Love, and so that weakens them a little bit to add him. And I think even if you take away Love and you add Paul George, I'm not sure how close that brings the Cavs to the Warriors.
I agree with you, and that's why I put out the scenario. There's no chance they get Jimmy Butler because they would have to clearly do a trade with the Bulls. He's not going to be a free agent. Paul George is going to be looking for a maximum caliber contract. LeBron James could use somebody else on the perimeter because when you're watching this series, if there's anybody standing in front of Kevin Durant playing defense and it's not LeBron James, number one, that's clearly an accident and a mismatch. Two, when LeBron James is guarding Kevin Durant, he still had his way. And so if you notice the first 3 quarters, LeBron James was able to focus on his offense and he was explosive, putting up big-time numbers. In the fourth quarter, he was the player guarding Kevin Durant, actually, when he got going. So for those Golden State Warriors, who initially did a really good job of building their team through the draft, that's why I give Mark Jackson a lot of credit. That's one of the hardest things to do in this league, is to build a team, nurture one, as you draft Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Festus Ezeli, Harrison Barnes. It's one of the toughest things to do as Laker fans, as Sixer fans that are trying to do the exact same thing. And by the way, it's head scratching to me why Mark Jackson doesn't have a current coaching job. Even Colin Kaepernick thinks that's a little bit strange. But with that being said, these Golden State Warriors now add Kevin Durant, a top flight player, a 30-plus point scorer, a guy that's already accomplished leading an Oklahoma City Thunder team to an NBA Finals years ago. Look at it this way. When I filled out my MVP ballot this year, first choice was Russell Westbrook. Second choice was James Harden. There was a time they were on a team with Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant clearly was the best player, went on to win 4 scoring titles, in an MVP playing with one, if not both of those guys. So for people that look at him performing on this level and be in a conversation of top flight player and think that the conversation is premature, he's been in the conversation the last few years. And just now he gets a chance to do it on this stage.
But so in it just seems that the Warriors are inevitable, unless like Durant and Curry get hurt, they are going to, I think, win the next two NBA finals after this at the very least. Why does somebody need to watch a Celtics-Bulls game or Celtics-Spurs or something like that during the NBA like regular season? What are the stakes of any game that doesn't involve the Warriors?
Because you have to appreciate the greatness of so many things that's happening throughout the league. The all-time greats have been dynastic in the game. Celtics 17 championships, Lakers 16. That's about 48% of the total championships. The Bulls draft Michael Jordan. They get 6 championships along with Scottie Pippen. Tim Duncan and the Spurs get 5 championships. Kobe ends up with 5. 3 of those are Shaq. A lot of those were led by and or navigated by all-time great puppet masters. Red Auerbach, Jerry West, Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, Jerry Krause, Phil Jackson got a chance to coach a couple of those different teams. So now we're seeing that happen again right in front of us. Kevin Durant joined the Golden State Warriors. And in recruiting him, you tell him, you probably have a chance to win a championship in Oklahoma City. But if you come to Golden State, you have a chance to do what LeBron, Wade, and Bosh talked about. You have a chance to win not 4, not 5, not 6. And so for this to be playing well in his first year with the team, I have not seen 2 players play at an MVP level of dominance like he and Steph Curry in their primes, both being MVPs under 30, which we have not seen in the game's history, since Shaq and Kobe, since Mike and Scottie. And unfortunately for me, in 1998, I got a chance to play against that Bulls team and lost to them in 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And in 2000, play against that Lakers team and lost to them in 6 games. So this level of dominance has been unique for the group. But if you're going to be an NBA, but as an NBA fan, there's so many terrific storylines. I mentioned Russell, averaging a triple-double. I'm disappointed with the way James Harden flamed out, but he had an amazing season. What about Kawhi Leonard? He's in that best player in the game conversation. John Wall ascended this year. Isaiah Thomas ascended this year. What about the Greek Freak in Milwaukee? What are the Clippers going to do with their team? Can they finally get a small forward? Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum in Portland. There's a lot of really good basketball happening. Anthony Davis, Carl Anthony Towns. There's so much great basketball still happening in the game that we can't diminish the fact that the Golden State Warriors have established themselves as a dominant team.
Real quick before we get out of here, Lonzo Ball worked out for the Lakers yesterday, and the Lakers brass are pretty clearly setting boundaries on LaVar Ball. They said he was allowed at dinner, but he wasn't allowed at the workout. Do you think that if like the Celtics draft Fultz and the Lakers draft Ball, that Magic Johnson and Luke Walton and Jeannie Buss, etc., are going to really try to keep a real tight leash on LaVar Ball?
I don't think it's going to be much of an issue as people think. Here's what I take away from how LaVar Ball is handling his situation with Lonzo Ball. If you notice, the person with the biggest personality happens to be the father. It's almost like Bundini Brown, for you youngsters, you could just Google it, for Muhammad Ali. He's basically being his hype man. There are people who didn't watch UCLA, don't pay attention to collegiate basketball. But going into this year's draft, they know about Lonzo Ball. The reason why is because of the promotion of his dad. I have no problem with his entrepreneurial spirit, his love and support for his kids, when I see somebody say that they're a better basketball player than Michael Jordan, that's clearly hyperbole. And we're buying it. And so every time we mention it, he keeps cashing those checks. And so as somebody that grew up in a single-parent home, that never met his father, Jimmy Walker, who was the number one pick in the 1967 NBA draft, I do support their kinship and their family. And so it's not a surprise to me when a team doesn't allow a parent to come to a workout. That's 98% of the time, including mine. My mother wasn't at my workout. So it's okay, but it's not for public consumption just because he's become a notable public figure as it goes into this NBA draft. But none of that is going to affect Lonzo Ball, in particular in the NBA locker room. Here's why. Because of his style of play, he's not coming into the league to be a volume scorer, a guy that's going to take 25 shots to get 20 points. He's a distributor. And you know what NBA players like? People that make them better and make the game easier for them. And because that's his style of play, his teammates are going to welcome him with open arms, and I think he's going to have an opportunity to have a terrific career.
Is there anything we didn't talk about with the NBA Finals or the general NBA landscape that you think is really interesting?
I think we pretty much touched all of the bases.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on. You were on TV late last night, so you must have gotten to bed even later. So I really appreciate your time, and best of luck with everything going forward. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
No, I'm a follower of the podcast. As you know, our Jalen and Jacoby podcast, we pay attention to the landscape of those out there, and I'm a big fan, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, thanks, Jalen. Have a great rest of the week.
All right, you too.
Bye.